This is the most important thing we're going to do today. We're going to split a hair. We're going to talk about kinds of causal research hypotheses. Two kinds of causal research hypotheses. Causal hypotheses about treatment comparisons. I've got this treatment. I've got this treatment. This treatment may have only one active ingredient, or it may have a bunch. And this treatment may have one active ingredient or a bunch, and they may or may not share active ingredients, and I don't give a shit. I want to compare this thing to this thing. How are we doing? That's usually where it starts. My new drug, Excedrin, great example. Excedrin, you compare it to other drugs. Excedrin has acetaminophen and regular aspirin and caffeine in it. Almost everything they compared it to when they brought it out had either acetaminophen or aspirin in it. The magic was both added to caffeine. You with me? So the first thing was, does Excedrin work? When Excedrin works, now the question is, why does Excedrin work? Now I'm trying to identify causal elements. Not compare treatments, but identify that causal element. And the magic was supposed to be the caffeine. Why? Because, I've lost it. It's a menstrual discomfort medication. Midol. Bless you, whoever said Midol. Midol was one of the first things to say, fuck, caffeine helps. Caffeine. Strangely, a whole bunch of guys didn't want to take Midol. And Excedrin said, let's call it something else. Patent laws are pretty loose and fluffy. Let's make this and call it Excedrin. Not Midol. So now we're trying to say what element matters. You with me? So, this is comparing different treatments to each other and different controls to each other. This is almost always some version of multiple pseudo-treatment control conditions. Because this is more specific than this. And so when somebody is imbuing cause, you have to stop and figure out whether they're talking about a collection of elements that has a cause as a group or a treatment, or whether they're trying to say a particular thing is the causal element. I call it becausing. You see it all the time. We do it in conversation. You see it on commercials. You certainly see it on the news. There's all of this shit going on, but let me tell you why. And I pluck one out and I go, that's the reason. Why did they do this? Because they're like that. You with me? You have to set up different designs. So let's take a look at how this process works. I created a new one-session treatment for social anxiety that uses a combination of group therapy, gets them used to talking with other folks, and cognitive self-appraisal, gets them to notice when they are and are not socially anxious. Volunteer participants were randomly assigned to the treatment or no treatment control. Oh, I got random assignment. I personally conducted all the treatment conditions to assure treatment integrity. I'm trying to talk you into ongoing equivalence and manipulation fealty. It's a one-session treatment. Here are my results using a DV that measures social context tolerance obtained during an exercise conducted at the end of the four-hour therapy session. Looks like I'm about to make a causal statement. I've got random assignment. I've got manipulation. I've got short-term in-house control. This is looking pretty good. I've got a significant effect, and the group therapy plus appraisal has a higher mean than the control group. I'm about to make a causal statement. The question is, which causal statement can I make? Blue. Here is evidence that the combination of group therapy and cognitive self-appraisal increases social context tolerance. Green, you can see that the treatment works because of the cognitive self-appraisal. The group therapy really doesn't contribute anything. Which of those can I say from these data? Blue or green? I know, it's hard to be brave on a Friday, and I've been so mean so many times. Blue or green?
Blue.
Make sense? I can't say, I know there's two differences here. I'm well aware of there are two differences there. But I like this one. So I'm going to make all my attributions there. Watch out for it. It happens a lot more than you might think. Especially watch that tricky, slimy transition from the results section where everybody behaves themselves to the discussion section where they're trying to convince you how important the results are. And nothing is more important than being a causal element. So let's say that I really wanted to go after the green. The treatment works because of the cognitive self-appraisal. The group therapy really doesn't contribute anything. I need at least two more conditions. I need the group therapy by itself, and I need the self-appraisal by itself. And in order to support this support this research hypothesis, I need a combination of findings. And that is the most common consequence of moving from a two-group design to a multiple-group design. We're now not talking about the direction of difference between two groups. We're talking about the pattern of the direction of difference across multiple groups. And so if we really wanted to do this, we would add in these other two conditions. And just to keep things simple, let's assume that we got nice replication of our two conditions. What patterns of data would we need to fully support the green hypothesis? So the first is the treatment works because of cognitive self-appraisal. If the combination works because of cognitive self-appraisal, then self-appraisal ought to do as well as the combination. And the combination ought to do better than the part that doesn't matter. How are we doing? It's a pattern of data now to support a hypothesis. And the second part, the group therapy really doesn't contribute anything, so the group therapy does poorer than the combination and equivalent to the no treatment control. How are we doing? Okay? This is the kind of structure that we want to have. Now, we could augment this theoretically. We have a tendency of comparing a hypothesis, asking if a hypothesis is right or wrong. A research hypothesis is right or wrong. Starting by deciding whether to retain or reject the null. If we reject the null, we have a pattern of data. Does the pattern of data match the hypothesis or not? It is also possible to set up a research study to compare or contrast two research hypotheses. In this case, we can actually support three. Somebody who says, group therapy's the shit. It's the good stuff. That's what we need. Somebody who says, nope, self-appraisal is all you need. And a third person who says you have the combination, and that's what you really need. During the 40s, 50s, and 60s, there was a huge push to having research designs that contrasted multiple research hypotheses. I came in, I was trained right at the end of that. This is what you were talking about, Nico. About setting up a design to contrast hypotheses instead of test one. It didn't survive well because we're lazy. That's my interpretation. The same reason that Bayesian statistics hasn't survived particularly well, because it requires an extra bit of work. The same reason that non-nil hypothesis testing hasn't survived particularly well, because it requires an extra bit of work. I could make the same fussy old guy complaint about confidence intervals. But it is, whenever possible, more powerful to compare research hypotheses. Sometimes it's as simple as comparing the treatment groups. We can think of these as pseudo-treatment controls, or we can think of those as separate treatments. So one of the things you ought to try and do is not just have a winner by proxy, not just have a one-person race, but to compare patterns of results that would be predicted by different theories, different notions, different hypotheses. One of the guys who was on my dissertation committee, he was a young faculty member at the time, literally got tenure with 7 null findings. You're thinking, but I can get a null finding every time I run. What? Run a small sloppy study. It's going to tend towards the null. Where's the challenge? What his genius was, is he would look at a theory and he would identify a prediction that that theory made, usually 2 or 3 of them, and then show that only some of those predictions happen. That was the way he worked on tightening and focusing theories, is separating what predictions they did and didn't support, which predictions did and didn't work out. And all of his sexiest stuff was like, well, of course it says that. I mean, it's said that for 50 years and nobody's ever checked. Some bitch checked. And what he did in a number of memory theories was say, this isn't the theory we think it is. This part of it works, this part of it doesn't. What are the consequences of that? And so, remember what we've talked about before. Our goal is not P less than 0.05. Because sometimes the research hypothesis is the null. More importantly, our goal is not to support our research hypotheses, because sometimes our hypotheses are full of booby. Our job is to get it right. And you're going to get things right faster in more complicated designs that look past treatment comparisons to treatment element specification and causal hypotheses. That's the big push today, to change the way you think about the conditions that should be in a design so you're not just comparing treatments, but you're asking why treatments work, focusing on causal elements. Let's play again. The new online homework I've been using provides immediate feedback for a set of 20 problems. To assess this new homework, I compared it with the online homework I used last semester, which had 10 problems but no feedback. I randomly assigned who received which homework, made sure they did the correct type. The DV was the percent correct on the quiz given right after the homework was completed. Here's the results. I got random assignment, I got manipulation, I got short-term control. I'm about to make a causal statement. I have a significant difference between the groups, and the new homework did better. I'm about to make a causal statement. Same question. Which one? Here is evidence that the new treatment is more effective because it provides immediate feedback. The new homework seems to produce better learning. With me? Okay, may you never struggle with this distinction again. Once you see it, it's pretty big. And believe it or not, this is a magic word to watch and listen for. When somebody says because, they are probably going to pluck an element out of a multi-element thing and say, that one, forget the rest of it, that one. Your job, catch it. Well, what if I decided I really needed this? If I really needed to test this hypothesis? What I have to do, first of all, is recognize that the new homework and the old homework are different in 2 ways. New homework and old homework's hiding things. Describe a condition by its operationalization, by its elements, not by a title. If somebody starts titling conditions, start asking how the hell it was operationalized and how many elements it has. You're probably going to discover, maybe help them discover, something they didn't even have in mind. So if I've got a new homework with 20 problems with feedback and an old homework with 10 problems without feedback, there are 2 other combinations that are interesting. See, I can't throw stuff out there's going to have to be some problems. Right? I can't hold problems. I can't make problems zero. Feedback comes in two kinds, both of which are represented in those old and new. So we have to stretch out all of the different combinations. And here again is a set of data that would give us pretty good support for the blue hypothesis, the elemental hypothesis, the causal element hypothesis. Here is evidence that the new homework is more effective because it provides immediate feedback. So feedback did better than no feedback with 20 problems versus 10, so I don't care. That's a confounded comparison. I don't learn anything about either problems or feedback from comparing the old and the new. If I want to look at the effect of problems, I need to compare the 20 problems with and the 10 problems with. Now the only difference is number of problems. Doesn't look like it matters. If I want to look at the effect of feedback, I want to look at 20 with and 20 without. Looks like it does matter. I can also look at the effect of problems by comparing here. So I got with feedback, more problems doesn't seem to help. Without feedback, more problems doesn't seem to help. Looks like a sort of a replication of more problems doesn't help. When we look at the effect of feedback with 20 problems, it's there. When we look at the effect of feedback with 10 problems, it's also there. Now we can say this. How are we doing? Yes?
I feel like that hypothesis is still not the best description of it. Like, I feel like what we're really seeing in these numbers is that feedback makes either homework effective.
Well, but old didn't have feedback. Keep going.
Okay. I guess
there's an idea in there. I can hear it.
Yeah, I guess that hypothesis to me. Yes, technically the new homework has the feedback, but I see these results and I'm like, well, why are we wasting our time with the 20 extra problems if we can just do the 10 problems with feedback and make an improved old homework?
Fine idea, but not the hypothesis.
Okay.
What you've done is you've identified how to apply this.
Okay.
Because this tells us that not only is there a feedback effect, but it works even on half the problems. I mean, this difference, maybe we run 12. You with me? Because I only got two data points, but it looks like the more you run, slightly better you get. And, 89 is a B+. So maybe I run 12 or 13. But all of that is interpreting an application.
Okay.
If we look at this as testing the hypothesis, I need all four of these because it's really great that I can show that feedback happens everywhere I looked. Okay? So, great idea. Just I'm asking you to separate testing the hypothesis first and then bleeding the results dry to apply them. Big fan of both. Yes?
We would like you to discuss his application and the implications section.
Yeah. Notice what's going on here. Not only does feedback work everywhere, but feedback with 10 problems looks to be sufficient. And feedback with 20 problems isn't significantly better. Then you have to decide if that's a real null or not based on, what does 2 points mean to you? Turn it into an effect size, see what it looks like that way. Crank it into the confidence interval, see where the null falls in the middle. You with me? Great question.